The following presentation was recorded at a Faith Builders colloquy. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
At the Olympics, there's a prize for the first, second, and third, but none for the fourth. So I figure I may as well take some shortcuts this afternoon. Portraits of child development and education. Looking at the young adult. Been to various touristy places and noticed that there's sometimes an artist of sorts anyway that sets up shop on the sidewalk and offers for a fee to draw your portrait. We've had a number of sketches this afternoon. From different angles, portraits can be made, and the appearance changes somewhat from depending on the age of the person in a physical sense. This afternoon, I've had somewhat the sensation of watching a child grow. In fact, in a measure, I've seen myself from, well, I don't remember infancy, but I've learned some things about my infancy this afternoon and continuing on in my own life and also the life of my children. Appreciated the three previous portraits. And now we come to the young adult. Age suggested for my consideration of 18 to 22. Now, I had thought I would ask all the 18 to 22-year-olds to stand up so we can see a literal portrait of you. However, Brother John mentioned that teenagers do not appreciate being made conspicuous. So I shall refrain. And I've heard that from my own children, too. When I was a child, there is that stage, but when I became a man, and the young adult is that stage of manhood and womanhood. This afternoon I'm planning to follow the outline on the paper that was sent to me. I guess I'm a literalist, and so I'll take things somewhat in that order. Looking first of all at levels of maturity, intellectual is where I'd like to start. The young adult, minds are usually quite mature, but in need of wisdom gained by experience and tempered by humility. This age group can grasp concepts and express themselves quite ably in most circumstances. I remember myself at this age having used some big words, fairly large vocabulary, because I was reading and hearing. I guess it was university level material. So I tended to talk and to think in those same terms. Since I've been teaching elementary school and some high school for the last 23 years, my vocabulary has moderated, although I still get words like concomitant and esoteric coming to mind, and I just have to rephrase them and express myself in simpler language. I think there's benefits to that. However, our oldest child, who has now reached her 20s, I notice also comes up with some pretty good gems sometimes, and So our son, who is an adolescent, at the family table, often says, "Dictionary! Dictionary!" It's just a little beyond what he's looking at. And so this age group has keen minds with a high capacity to learn, thinking in the abstract, and we trust that they have a long attention span, as demonstrated by this afternoon's program. In terms of emotional level of maturity, there's not the same mood swings as there is in adolescence, but yet not as emotionally stable as those who are mellowed by more years. We hope, as a community, that 18 to 22-year-olds will have a good measure of emotional and spiritual maturity, for this is the age of many of our Christian school teachers who are modeling before our children Christian commitment and experience. In terms of spiritual maturity, I, with Brother John, am encouraged by the zeal and determination of young people to do the will of God, by their sincerity, by their high ideals. Secondly, concerning the role of parents in the learning process, during this time period, the person becomes of age. as the term goes. Although the parental role is still significant, it's less than earlier and different from earlier. For example, the young adult may not be at home, maybe at college, maybe in VS or some other place. If it's living away from home, the parental role may well be in answering pleas for more money, please. At this age group, some young adults may get married. But there is much to teach in preparation for marriage on the part of parents. And after marriage, there is frequently lots of questions about cooking and repair and things of keeping a house. The extent of the role of the parents here is largely dependent on the relationship of the young person and the parent. If there's open communication and respect, then there's an open door for learning. In our own home, I have noticed some changes, although we try to give our children more space in terms of decision-making. Yet as they come for advice, and as they don't want to displease, at least as a general rule, we have avenues of influence and of teaching. Some possible areas of parental teaching yet in this age. There may be training for a vocation, such as a father-son team, working at plumbing or accounting or carpentry, or working in a bakery, or house cleaning, or early childhood education, babysitting, that sort of thing. Some learning from parents is simply incidental. I think there's a story of mother and daughter. And the daughter said, why do you always cut the ham, this chunk of ham, in two when you roast it? Well, she didn't know, really, a reason, but she said that's the way my mother did it. And so they checked with Grandma, and she said, well, her roasting pan wasn't big enough, so she cut it in half. That's the sort of influence and learning that may be experienced. Parents may give advice, probably less authoritatively given. They may give means for attendance at school, like faith builders or to go into voluntary service. And parents also can teach through their example. A 14-year-old wrote, Dear Abby, I hate my mother. Her rules are so unreasonable and stupid. The same person at age 20 wrote, Dear Abby, I want you to know I appreciate my mom so much. I want to raise my child just like my mom raised me. However, parents' instruction and impact is more limited in these years. Next, concerning the role of external discipline, it's too late for much of a molding influence. I read of a convict who was released, went home, took his father out to the yard, pointed to a tree which was crooked. This young man said to his father, straighten that tree. And his dad protested, saying, I can't, it's too big. He said, I am that tree. You should have corrected and instructed me when I was young. Maybe he still had an opportunity there, if his attitude was right. The Bible talks about chastening betimes, or in suitable time, or early enough. That implies that the time ends, as far as the parents are concerned. And so it's largely self-discipline, and mostly of an intrinsic nature rather than an external disciplinary nature. But depending on the arrangement with the parents, they live at home. Certainly in the late teens, there are things known as car keys and phone privileges. In a school setting, there's more responsibility on young people as young adults. But especially where there's a dormitory setting, like here at Faith Builders, there is a need for guidelines to learn the consequences of immaturity and to relate to authority. And then there's also a discipline imposed by examinations and deadlines. Some of us never seem to mature beyond needing a deadline. But there are some aspects of external discipline in that respect. Concerning the effect of peers on learning, there continues to be considerable peer pressure in these years. Why else do I see these fellows? In fact, one or several coming to church yesterday at a funeral I attended with an earring dangling from their ear. Peer pressure. I don't think they were taught there by their parents to have that particular decoration. One's peers can have a decided effect on the desire to learn. If one's friends are all going to college or they're all going to winter Bible school, there's a tendency to conform to that expectation. In some communities, there's a tendency to terminate schooling at the earliest possible opportunity. So there's a difference there as far as one's peers are concerned and their expectations. Even within a school setting, the choice of one's friends and associates can have an effect on learning. If it's the cool thing to study, to get good marks, or if it's just a matter of cruising through the term. Lastly, in terms of methods of teaching. Young adults are adults. And so it's good to remember when teaching young people that they are largely mature. There needs to be a continued involvement of students in the learning process. Much is mental. You know, when they're 6 years old, there's a lot that's sensory and concrete rather than abstract. But involvement, mental at least, is vital for learning, for teaching. One method that is used is the lecture method, and this tends to work better with young adults than with seven-year-olds, certainly. But there needs to be good content, there needs to be appropriate style to have the students mentally involved. And so we do well as teachers to be well prepared if we're going to use the lecture method, to use analogies and illustrations, to vary one's manner and voice, to use some humor and see what audience response, see whether they're with you or not, to incorporate questions, some of which may be rhetorical. Should we tell the truth? Not necessarily answering. Being practical certainly appeals because young people are looking for answers. And you can also combine the lecture method with other methods. Another appropriate method is the discussion technique. As adults, we appreciate when our viewpoint is recognized and even solicited. And so, if it's teaching Sunday school, or if it's in a setting like Faith Builders, or a place like Maranatha Bible School, which is where I've done most of my teaching on this age level, generating a good discussion, or at least cultivating one, is a suitable way of teaching. However, there should be an atmosphere of friendliness. It would be difficult, well, maybe not too difficult at this point, but when I first of all step into a group, particularly a larger group, it takes a little while to establish an atmosphere. Maybe it's of trust or of comfort with each other. It can help if we're sitting in a circle rather than spread out with mostly, at least the people at the back looking at heads, the back of heads. It's good for the teacher to have some patience, particularly in the initial stages of leading a discussion. It's foolish to simply ask factual questions because that doesn't do a whole lot. Who was the first man that killed another person, you know? Whether it's leading discussion with children, young children, or young adults, it's appropriate to express appreciation and commendation and give good feedback for the response in the discussion. And we may need to encourage the hesitant and certainly try to avoid embarrassing anyone in the discussion. So I'm saying there's the lecture method, there's the discussion, and then there's the modeling idea, or being a mentor for young people. Some places have a formal apprenticeship. This can be used in the trades, is also used in developing abilities in working with people, and I think that's one of the goals of Faith Builders. And that's That's important. Some things can be done simply by example, by giving a good model, but other things require instruction. It's hard to model how to write a budget, or how to study the Bible, or whether to go to Faith Builders or not. But we can model the value of tithing, or personal love for God, the importance of loyalty, and things like that. Another method that works not too badly, depending on the motivation of the young adult in terms of learning, is independent studies. Doing research, writing an essay, giving a seminar in front of one's peers. And another valid method is simply reading. When I went to school, we studied history. Years ago, the people read history. And so reading can expand one's horizons tremendously and make for a much better educated person. In conclusion, it's desirable to promote self-education following graduation so that it's a lifelong experience of learning. In fact, in God's school, we keep learning and we don't graduate till we reach the Jordan.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.